Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's stand up in honor of the late, great Muhammad Ali, the global sports ambassador, humanitarian, human rights activist, and three-time world heavyweight boxing champion, is having a final memorial service on this Friday in his hometown of Louisville, Kentucky. Before the memorial, Ali's body was carried in a black Cadillac hearse that traveled throughout the city. Muhammad Ali died last Friday, June 3rd, at the age of 74. The Voice of America's Ramon Taylor is in Louisville to cover the ceremonies for Muhammad Ali, who was nicknamed the greatest and the people's champion during his legendary career. VOA sports reporter Ben Cento asked Ramon, what's the atmosphere like in Louisville?
There's such a range of emotions here. You have people from across the city and from around the world who have come to pay their respects. And really, it's just out of a sign of respect, but also these are people who have really been touched by his presence at some point in his life. So there's sadness and there's laughter. People have, you know, remembering his famous quotes. So it's really just the full range of emotions that you would expect from someone who's passed that's left so much behind. And, you know, we're witnessing this here on the streets today. Just every street along the procession has been packed with mostly Louisville residents. But again, people from around the world.
Have you ever covered an event like this before?
You know, it's funny you ask. The answer is yes and no. I had the privilege of covering Nelson Mandela's funeral in South Africa, and that's also a one-of-a-kind event. I mean, you can't really compare the two because these are two very different leaders in their own right, but both with, you know, a shared message of unity. And, you know, one was a political leader, the other was a sports icon that transcended the world of sports into politics and every other aspect of society as well. They also happen to like each other. You know, they were friends, which you know makes this comparison even more special. They were willing to be jailed for what they believed in, and so I think that this is on par with that. But that being said, this is maybe the most famous man in the world, certainly the most famous Muslim American that we know today.
Like you said, Muhammad Ali transcended sports, as you can see from the turnout. What kind of reaction have you witnessed from the people there?
You know, when you ask people what accomplishment meant so much to you, it's you hear about the sports, of course. You know, everyone has the famous "blow like a butterfly, sting like a bee" quote up there, you know, up their arm. But they're also they want to talk about what he did for racial equality. They want to talk about what he did for Muslims in America, especially the Muslims that have traveled from across the United States and from different continents. We've seen from Asia, South America, down in Argentina, just everywhere. It's been an amazing response. So this man touched so many different people in so many different aspects of society, and you're really seeing that here today. Just a civil leader, a humanitarian, and people remember him most for that.
What's the best Ali story you've heard from someone that you can share with us?
Oh man, I think the best story I heard was when I was traveling to his local the neighborhood he grew up in. Actually, for the first 18 years of his life, he moved there when he was 5, and this is where he started grew the inspiration to become a boxer. And there were some childhood friends there who remember him and would tell us that one day this was actually after he had left town. You know, had some money under his belt, came back to visit. He came back and the kids wanted some ice cream. An ice cream truck came by. He bought the whole truck. He paid $10,000 for that truck and gave everybody ice cream. I mean, that's the kind of guy he is. He's the kind of person that comes back to the neighborhood to stay a part of the community even after he's become a legend.
Ali was beloved by many, but he was still a controversial figure. Have you heard any unflattering stories about him?
You know, I asked a few people about that, and the answer has been the same. If they're out there, and certainly there are some out there, they're hiding, and there's no reason for, you know, for many to be out there today. Certainly there are not many overall. He was the key word you mentioned there was, and you know, in his earlier days, some mentioned he was a controversial figure, joining the Nation of Islam, which was controversial. But he was less conservative as he grew, as he aged, and really those that maybe had some critical opinions of him earlier really came around as well. So again, if he was beloved by most, I mean, early on in his career, he is beloved by many, many more today.
Kids might not know about Ali as much as their parents' generation. Do you see any parents bringing their kids along?
I see kids everywhere. I've asked children what they know about Muhammad Ali, and you'd be surprised. They know quite a lot. I've had parents tell me that they're showing every documentary there is about Ali. I asked one kid what he knew about him. He said, "I knew he was the best boxer in the world. I know that he has a street named after him, and he also wore some fancy shoes." So I think, you know, that's a pretty good representation of you know, just how what a broad spectrum of popular and what an icon he was to every generation, even those that are growing up today.
What's your personal takeaway from the story of Muhammad Ali?
You know, this is just an incredible event. This I mean, as you mentioned, there's really no comparison to be here today. I think that when you talk to somebody, anybody, and you finally ask them that question, what did he mean to you? You see, and you don't see this in any other interview, you see everyone get emotional in one respect or another. They all have a story to share. And I think that just, it really transpires. And I've felt that emotion in speaking to some of the residents here and speaking to those that have traveled from around the world. This man meant so much to me growing up and seeing what he represented, and to see how much more he represented to the people who actually met him is an incredible feeling. There's nothing like it.
That's VOA's Ramon Taylor in Louisville, Kentucky. And Ramon was talking with VOA sports reporter Ben Cento. Meanwhile, on Thursday, the janaza, or Muslim funeral, was held for Muhammad Ali. Joining us now here in Studio 22 to tell us more is VOA sports reporter Tadi Abeje. Sporty greetings, Tadi.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The service was held in Freedom Hall in Louisville. Thousands of Muslims attended the ceremony to honor and remember the boxing great. Many people had personal stories of how Muhammad Ali impacted their lives. One of the attendees, Tahira El Sadiq, had this to say.
Growing up, I always heard about him. He was like this mythological feature in our community. And I met him when I was 10 years old. He came to our mosque in Lexington. And at that time, he did have Parkinson's. And years later, my father was diagnosed with Parkinson's as well. So it hits very close to home. And I'm very proud to be a Muslim and to be part of this community to offer our prayers for him.
Mustafa Sharif also offered prayers for Muhammad Ali. He flew in from Baltimore, Maryland, and he talked about about the stance Ali took against the Vietnam War.
For me, as a college student at the time when Muhammad Ali made his moral stand not to go to fight in the Vietnam War, it also gave me and many young men like myself the moral turpitude to be able to make that same stance. And throughout my life, he was just always been a pinnacle of someone to model oneself after.
Sir Faraz Barasha drove to the memorial from New Jersey. Muhammad Ali was definitely a role model. Riaz Hamid, who came from Louisville, from England, talks about his hero.
As a child growing up, you have two heroes in your life. One is your dad, and the other is Muhammad Ali. And I thought it was only right and fitting that we come and pay our respects to. A great man that changed the world. He changed the world for the better.
Sir Faraz Barasha drove to the memorial from New Jersey. He talks about how Ali set a positive example.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, as young Muslims in America, I think Ali means a lot to us. I think, you know, if you think about it in this era of, like, negative stereotypes about Islam, you know, you have one figure who's just kind of been able to stay above that fray and kind of really set a positive example for a lot of kids and a lot of people. And I think for us, it was just an honor to, you know, plan the trip out and to have the time to come out here and be here for that. I think it's it's a fitting chapter in our history as Muslims in America, and I think it's a monumental event for that sole purpose.
Muhammad Ali joined the Nation of Islam and changed his name from Cassius Clay in 1964. He converted to Sunni Islam in the 1970s and later embraced Sufism, which is a mythical school of the faith. He gave Muslims here in the United States and around the world a role model that they could look up to. I'm VOA's Toddy Bejri. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Toddy. Former world heavyweight boxing champion Larry Holmes is one of only five men to beat Muhammad Ali during his professional career. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa host, Shaka Sali, asked Holmes for his reaction after finding out Ali died last week.
Well, I kind of like expected because, you know, a few months ago I was down there in Louisville with him, and he didn't look too good. And I said to my wife, I don't know about that. I said, I don't think he got too much longer. They don't look good because he didn't talk. He didn't just sit there, just stood. And, you know, I was, like, worried, you know, and I didn't want to go back and see him again. But I went back and seen him again. He was still the same, doing the same thing. So, but I kind of expected. But one of the things about it hurt me. It hurt me because not only he was a friend of mine, but I think he was one of the greatest fighters ever lived in this world.
You happen to be one of the elite five boxers that, in fact, defeated at one time Muhammad Ali. But yet again, you happen perhaps to be a very unique individual, given that you were his former sparring partner, a friend, and of course, eventually a world heavyweight champion. What was it like to fight Muhammad Ali?
You know, it wasn't a good pleasure fighting Muhammad because, you know, he was my friend and he was my boss. And then I had to fight him, you know, but then it was the money thing, you know. If I beat him, I'd be the old man. If I lost, I never had anything. So, you know, my thing was not to take it hard on him because, you know, I knew how he would fight. And I knew that I could beat him. So I don't want to hurt Muhammad Ali because he is my friend. And so when we fought, you know, I told him, don't get hurt. Just don't go crazy out there. I said, I don't want to hurt nobody. I don't want you to be hurt. And, you know, he told me, shut up and fight, you know. And I did what I had to do without hurting him, I think. I don't think I hurt him. And, you know, we remained friends because right after the fight, I went back to his dressing room and I told him, I gave him a hug and told him I love him. And he said, if you love me, why you beat me up like that, man? So, you know, he was a great man. And he wasn't angry with me or nothing like that because it was about the money. He got $10 million, and, you know, back then, that was a lot of money, you know? So he was happy, and we remained friends even after the fight.
Any particular reason, Rally, why you cried after the bout? You don't seem really to have enjoyed the fight.
I don't enjoy the fight. He was my friend. He was my boss, you know what I mean? You know, he was a guy that helped teach me how to fight. I mean, when I first went with him in 1971, I was just an amateur. I was learning how to fight. And he gave me the opportunity to come to his camp and work out with him, you know, and learn from him. He gave me that opportunity. When I worked out with Muhammad Ali for the very first time, we went to Reading, Pennsylvania. He gave me gloves and shoes, everything to box with. And he gave me the opportunity to box. And when he boxed with me, of course, he gave me the black eye, right? He gave me the black eye, and I loved it. And I said, okay. He wanted to put ice on my eye, and I won't let him put ice. He goes, why? I said, because I'm showing this off. Muhammad Ali hit me in my eye. I said, this is nice. I can show it off. And, you know, he told me I was crazy, put the ice, but I never put ice. And then when I got home, I bragged about Muhammad Ali boxing me and giving me a black eye. It was a brag. Yeah, I bragged about it.
Now, knowing him the way you did, and of course you have to be one of the few very unique individuals that do that, do you sincerely feel, do you sincerely think that it was necessary for Muhammad Ali to fight the last two fights? I'm talking about yours and the one of Trevor Babik in the Bahamas.
Yeah, well, Trevor Babik, he didn't need to fight, but what it was about was the money. It was about the money with Ali. He started fighting for money after he couldn't beat me. He just said, I'll take a fight with money. And I didn't like that fight. I didn't think he should have took it. But again, you can't tell people what to do. because, you know, the man, when I tell him that he's a champ, I said, shut up. He can do what he want to do, so I don't say anything. Well, if he was the champ, in my opinion, he was always going to be the champ. So, you know, the Burbank fight, the Trevor Burbank fight, Trevor Burbank didn't fight the Ali that I fought. If he did, he would have got beat.
You, again, happen to be one of the few people that interacted with him in a very special manner. What is it that during that experience, really, that you learned? What did you learn from him, and what did that interaction mean to you?
Hey, listen, I got the best jab in boxing. I had the best jab in boxing because of Muhammad Ali, because I tried to keep up with him. And when he threw the jab, I want to throw the jab. I want to beat him to the jab because everybody knew how Ali was. Everybody knew that he was a good jabber. He always jabbed right-hand combination. And I wanted to be like that, so I worked on that, to beat him to the jab. And that's why I lasted so long in boxing, because I had a good jab. Everybody had to worry about the Larry Holmes jab. And then when they worried about the Larry Holmes jab, then they had to worry about the right. And so they couldn't do both. And I was able to win the fight.
What was it like being with him in Zaire back in 1974? I'm talking about the Rambo in the jungle.
In the jungle. I was there with him. I was there with Muhammad Ali, with the Rambo in the jungle, in Zaire. And he trained good. I mean, you know, people love him. Ali Boumaye. Ali Boumaye.
Ali killed him.
Yeah. And, you know, there's all... a lot of people that we that didn't speak good English, but they know how to say Ali Boumaye. We didn't know how to speak African, so we said Ali Boumaye. You know, we said the same thing, Ali Boumaye, Ali Boumaye. And it was neat. And people, everywhere you go, people love you. You know, they run after, they take little kids running behind the car, Ali, Ali, Ali. I mean, you know, it was mind-boggling. And you know what Ali said? He said, boy, he said, you're home. This is home, man. This is what our people look like. That's what we look like. And you know, he was very proud to be in Zaire. And I was just as proud as he was, because I was with the greatest fighter of all time.
Any particular reason why the people preferred Ali to the champion himself, George Foreman?
George Foreman, though, it was okay boxer, but you know, but George Foreman they didn't like George Foreman. I mean, you know, because Ali, they loved Ali, they didn't like George Foreman, because George Foreman wasn't no Muhammad Ali, and people everywhere Ali go, people go with him, but George, they didn't do that with George. That's okay, because I didn't like George either.
I see. Well, I gather that he couldn't autograph your boxing gloves. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Have you been to Africa, Lale, since 1974? And if not, when do you plan to do so?
I did not go to Zaire, but I've been in different parts of Africa already. Yeah, I've been in different parts of Africa, but I've never been back to Zaire. But I would like to go back to Zaire, and I met some Africans here, and they always tell me that they're going to send for me, and they're going to make arrangements for me to come there. Last week, I got a call and saying that, Larry, we want you to come to Africa. But that's the last thing I heard. Nobody bring me over, so.
What is it like to be a world heavyweight champion of the world? And you were for many years.
Well, it was an honor to be the heavyweight champion of the world. It's an honor to work, to represent black fighters that to be able to do something. It was great to honor white fighters if they work hard enough, they can be something. You know, it means something when anybody that work hard as I work can be anything that they want to be. You know, whether you're black, whether white, or orange, or green color, I don't care. If you work at something, you can always be that. Ali was living proof that if you work at it, you can be it. And he was one example. He immortalized boxing, and he would go down as one of the greatest fighters of all time. And I'm just glad to say that I was one of the guys who helped him become one of the great fighters of all time.
That's former world heavyweight boxing champion Larry Holmes. And Larry was talking with the VOA's Straight Talk Africa host, Shaka Sali, from the eastern U.S. state of Pennsylvania. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Happy Friday and sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Good to be with you as always.
Andrew, what's trending in the sports world on this Friday?
Well, it's all about two sports greats who have sadly passed away. So we'll start, of course, with Muhammad Ali, as we've been talking about, seeing lots of scenes on social media as his funeral procession makes that 19-mile winding trip through Louisville, Kentucky, his hometown. And as you heard from Larry Holmes there, you know, you said people chanting, Ali, Ali. Well, we're seeing a lot of videos on social media, people filming as Muhammad Ali's hearse is going by. They're chanting, Ali, Ali. And they're throwing flowers. If you look at pictures of this hearse, it's covered in flowers that people have thrown. Seeing just some really moving images. One that I was really touched by was that you see a lot of parents with very young kids. I mean, these kids can barely walk. They're 3 or 4 years old. They certainly maybe not know who Muhammad Ali is other than what their parents have told them. And these parents are rushing their kids out there so they can just touch the hearse and just so they can be a part of this moment. It speaks to what a huge influence and impact Muhammad Ali had on not just the people who were alive and following him when he was fighting, but in the years afterwards and even after he's died, still having a huge impact for the generation. So we're seeing a lot of those really touching tributes on social media.
In fact, on that point, Andrew, the Voice of America's Ramon Taylor is in Louisville, and he told VOA sports reporter Ben Cento that, yeah, he's seeing lots and lots of children along the side of the road paying tribute to Muhammad Ali. So, yeah, his influence is still being felt across generations.
Oh, yeah. And Ramon, actually, I saw he was doing some video, some Facebook Live and some Twitter video. So he was contributing to that social media. But, you know, we said Louisville was Muhammad Ali's home. He's, you know, a hero all over the world, but especially in his hometown. Of course, Louisville's known for the Kentucky Derby and for horse racing. So another tribute they had a riderless horse that was kind of wearing the robe, the boxing robe that said Ali on the back, that was draped over that horse. So the riderless horse, of course, is a symbol of mourning, of someone who's been lost. So it's someone lost in battle. And, of course, a great fighter, Muhammad Ali. So a nice tribute from his hometown.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. I posted a photo of a memorial candle at the Muhammad Ali Center in Louisville, Kentucky. And the candle says, "Don't count the days, make the days count." That's one of Muhammad Ali's famous quotations. And responding to the photo, a nice comment from Ezekiel Michael Karimu. And Ezekiel writes from Bose, Sierra Leone, commenting on Muhammad Ali's passing, "Rest in peace. Your legacy will always remain in our hearts." Thanks for writing, Ezekiel Michael from Sierra Leone. Andrew Palcheski, I know you mentioned another big sports figure who has passed. Tell our VOA listeners about that.
Yeah, the news earlier today that Gordie Howe has died at the age of 88. Gordie Howe is known as Mr. Hockey, huge contributor to the sport of hockey, to the National Hockey League here in the U.S. He played 26 seasons in the National Hockey League. 25 of them were spent with the Detroit Red Wings. So just like with Muhammad Ali in Louisville, Kentucky, Gordie Howe, his hometown Detroit, he was a real hero there. In fact, I've already seen one tribute on social media. They just recently named the Detroit Red Wings hockey team arena the Little Caesars Arena. There's already a petition to change that name to the Gordie Howe Arena. So one of the really nice tributes that are being shared for Gordie Howe. And even at a time, there was the term Muhammad or Ali and Gordie Howe, both of the names together, trending on social media because a lot of people lumping them together and saying, in 1 week we lost Muhammad Ali and Gordie Howe, these two sports legends. It really hits hard for all sports fans around the world.
You mentioned Doug Bernard, big sports fan, but maybe we'll get some insights from Doug next week on Gordie Howe.
Absolutely, I bet he'll have a lot to say.
That's the VOA's Andrew Palcheski, our social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too.
And that wraps up the June 10th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Jackson Witt. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. We'll be right back.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
According to the State Department's annual terrorism report for 2015, ISIL remained the greatest terrorism threat globally. Despite the losses it sustained in 2015, ISIL continued to occupy large areas of Iraq and Syria. ISIL's territorial control in Iraq and Syria reached a high point in spring 2015 and began to diminish thereafter. ISIL did not have a significant battlefield victory in Iraq after May of 2015, and by the end of the year, 40% of the territory ISIL once controlled in Iraq had been liberated. This number has continued to increase in 2016. There were two key trends in counterterrorism last year, said Acting Coordinator for Counterterrorism Justin Sibrel. First was the increased level of international cooperation and coordination to address terrorist threats. The United States led a global coalition to counter ISIL. The multinational joint task force was established by the Lake Chad Basin countries to confront Boko Haram, and the efforts of the Horn of African nations to coordinate efforts against al-Shabaab in Somalia are examples of this ongoing cooperation and evidence both of an increased appreciation for the importance of a coordinated effort and of the political will to bring it about. We've seen countries across the international community mobilized to put in place fundamental reforms to address the supply and transit of foreign terrorist fighters attempting to reach the conflict in Syria and Iraq. The United Nations Security Council Resolution 2178, adopted in September 2014, provided the framework for this effort. In line with that resolution, 45 countries have passed or updated existing laws to more effectively identify and prosecute foreign terrorist fighters. The second key trend was the increased global realization that to succeed in our efforts to wipe out terrorism, governments, the private sector, civil society, and religious leaders must work together to address the causes of radicalization to violence and recruitment into terrorist organizations. The international community made important progress in degrading terrorist safe havens, in particular, a sizable reduction in the amount of territory held by ISIL in Iraq and Syria, as well as the finances and foreign terrorist fighters available to it, said Acting Coordinator Sibrel. We will continue to devote resources toward improving counterterrorism capabilities of key partners' countries, as well as focusing long-term efforts in addressing the underlying causes that contribute to violent extremism.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
Next on Let's Talk, dual citizenship. Would you consider acquiring the citizenship of another country? Join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing dual citizenship. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.